The Joe Rogan Experience.
Oh, you cut out the Nick Diaz part. I see what you did. Very, very smart. There was a thing that Nick Diaz had a quote. He's like, you know, train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day. Do you not hate him now? If you folks are not just listening to this, George St. Pierre is our guest, and he's the UFC welterweight champion of the world. Just recently defended his title against Nick Diaz. Are you cool with Nick now? It seemed like you guys were complimentary after the fight.
I'm cool with him. I don't know if he's cool with me. I'm like, I'm all right. I'm cool with everybody.
That dude turns everything into a personal affair, right?
Yes, he does.
Does that ever get to you when guys shit talk you? Because you're like, if people didn't know you, all right, if the average person did not know what you do, besides the look, you know, that you're physically strong, they would never think that you're a fighter. You're a very friendly guy. You're very, like, easy to... I've seen you interact with a lot of different people over many years. You're very easygoing. Very, very nice to get along with.
Yeah, I don't want to look like a fighter when you talk to me, let's say, on the phone. I want to look like a normal human being.
So right.
Of course, yeah. That's a little bit the impression that people have sometimes.
Well, you're not just a nice guy. You're honest about your own vulnerabilities, which I've always found fascinating. Like, you talk about what makes you scared. You talk about what you're worried about. Like, you know, like even this Nick Diaz fight, you're like, I am scared because I don't want to lose to this guy. Like, there's a lot of people who never admit that.
And, yeah, but it makes you stronger to admit that you're scared, because you're not scared to say that you're scared.
Right.
Someone who doesn't admit it because he's scared to admit that he's scared. He's scared of himself. He's scared of what people are going to think about him. I'm not scared what people are going to think. They have to see me as I am. So I'm not scared to admit that I'm scared.
And it's almost like when you don't admit you're scared, it's like you're protecting yourself from evolving. Because the only way you can ever be realistic about a situation and get better at anything in life is you've got to accurately address what's happening.
True, 100%, you know.
And there's some people that don't do that. And I think that cuts them off from a certain amount of progress in life. I think there's a certain, there's like walls that you put up yourself because you're not willing to look at your own failures.
100%. You're not honest with yourself, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what it is a little bit.
Yeah, so admitting you're afraid is like, so what, bitch?
Yeah, yeah, I'm afraid. That's afraid what. That's, you know what? As much as I'm afraid, I'm gonna make that walk the day of it, and I'm gonna do it regardless.
Well,
and it sounds more crazy. I would be more afraid of a guy that says I'm afraid, but you know what? I'm gonna still do it, and I don't care if I'm afraid. Bring it, I'll do it. Like, this is sound crazy to me more than a guy said, oh no, I'm not afraid, because this guy is a liar. He's afraid to say that he's afraid. He's a liar.
Right.
Like, man, you know what I mean? To me, like, personally, that's what it is.
Yeah, the posturing and posing—it's unnecessary.
Exactly.
But you are afraid of aliens, though, right?
Yeah, I'm afraid of a lot of things.
Is it true you have like a path mapped out in your house how to get out if the aliens show up?
No, that's the rumor, man.
No, that's what I heard. I heard you have a plan, because I know you like to use game plans. So I figured
I know karate and I know jiu-jitsu. So the aliens show up, I put a triangle choke on him, and I also have a katana. I have also a katana, a Japanese katana. So if they come, I can slice them apart.
Wow, do you keep a sword in your house?
Yes, I am. It's a collection. You know, it's for me. I have two.
You better not bring any crazy bitches home.
Ah, oh, man, it's
a sword and crazy bitches.
I have this hacksaw on the side of my bed that I always forget is there, and I always like almost cut my finger off all the time.
You should put that in the garage, son. Fuck is wrong
with
you?
It's like this big sword / meat cleaver that it's just awesome.
So, do you really have a fear of aliens, or is this just a bullshit rumor? Because didn't you do a countdown show and you did a whole thing talking about how you're being scared of being abducted by aliens?
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm scared of a lot of things, you know.
But that's a specific one.
I'll get into it. Like, I can't talk about it right now. But yeah,
you can't talk about it right now.
Yeah, so it's one day I'm gonna come out and make a big thing about it. But now,
are they in the room right now?
Yeah. Have you had an experience with aliens?
No.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
I don't know.
You don't know. You might have had an experience with
him. My manager going to have a heart attack right now.
Listen,
this is my
brother. I would never do or lead you down any path that's bad for your career. Just as you said that it's good to be afraid, it's also good to be honest about everything, even shit that sounds crazy.
No. That's the thing. I'm honest. I'm honest. I'm afraid. But I don't have to tell everything on the public.
It's true. You don't.
But you know.
Did you have sex with an alien?
Because you're a smart guy. Let me tell you, you're a very smart guy. You know how to dig into people's mind. and as much as I like you, I hate that about you. Because he put me on the spot right now. But he's a very smart guy. But no, I can't go too deep into this.
Listen, if I was on an alien spacecraft and I had sex with an alien, like I'm assuming you did. I feel like I would just come out and talk about it. I don't know why you would hold that back.
No, but I mean, I never...
Something happened, George.
I don't know. It's either I'm crazy or maybe it really happened, but I hope that I'm crazy.
I don't think you're crazy.
I hope I am. I could be crazy. You know, some people, some great mind, they have been hallucinating stuff. Some people are how do you say, maniaco-depressive. Some people are OCD, some people are this, some people are that, and they're still they've been able to achieve great stuff in their life. So maybe I'm crazy, who knows, I don't know. I hope I'm crazy.
Well, are these experiences, I can help you in one way, are these experiences happening at night?
I am not sure. I am not sure.
Have any of these experiences happened while you've been in a dream state, or where you've just been dreaming, or just asleep, and you were woken up?
I am not sure that I had I don't know. I don't remember anything.
But it was nighttime type things. Was it nighttime when you think you might have had something happen to you?
I can't say something happened to me. I have no proof. I just don't know.
What I'm going to tell you about is your brain produces a chemical while you're sleeping.
But I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to be honest about it. Sometime I'm looking at the clock. And it's like I wake up and I look at the clock right after, and it's like the clock advanced like a 4 hour or 2 hours. There's a time zone that I don't remember what happened.
It's called falling asleep.
I hope so.
What do you think? You think you're getting snatched up and taken away for a couple hours?
No, I think maybe I fall asleep. That's why I hope. Or I can drive my car. And already happened. I drove my car.
While you were sleeping?
No. I drove my car in a normal day, like going somewhere. Then I look, and it's 2 hour pass. I'm like, 2 hour I just passed, like this. Like maybe I watched the time the wrong time. Like I watched my clock and I made a mistake myself.
Right. Most likely, right?
Yes, of course. I hope so.
Well, that's very minor stuff. That's very minor stuff.
Yeah.
But. That could be you being tired because you push yourself and a lot of stress.
It's exactly that's exactly what I hope. So it's exactly what I hope. So,
but you don't have any memories of great dudes putting fingers up your butt.
No, I don't.
None of that.
I've had a job where you're driving down the street, like on the highway, and you're just like kind of dazed out. And you're like, wait, how long I've been dazed out for like 20 minutes. What have I been doing for 20 minutes?
You could totally go on autopilot, yeah. And then like you just realize like almost all of a sudden you're home.
Yeah,
but. The thing about being exhausted and sleep, and having these experiences at night, there's a chemical your brain makes that's one of the most powerful psychedelic drugs known to man. So one of the things they're trying to connect, it's called DMT. And one of the things they're trying to connect is people having near-death experiences and people that have had UFO, alien abduction type experiences, and this chemical. And that they can introduce this chemical into the human body, and these people have very similar experiences to what they had when they had a UFO encounter or when they had, a white light near-death experience encounter. And it's most likely there's this chemical that's doing this. So when people are having these experiences, they're very realistic, and they do believe they're being taken aboard by, a UFO somewhere, they might not be wrong.
But this is not a UFO encounter. This UFO, it's unidentified flying object.
Right.
Object. This the encounter you talk about that if they've been taking a board, this is different. It's like it could be a third type encounter. There's many ways, but this is different. Yeah, but Like, you talk about me, I don't have any memory of such thing. But the thing I have, like you say, sometimes I fall asleep, then I wake up, is the time pass, and I'm like, well, you know, it's like
But that's just because you're tired, man. That's not aliens.
Yeah, no.
But are you worried? You're like, man, maybe it's aliens. Is that what you do?
No, it's because I feel like I didn't fall asleep, and I'm not tired. I'm wide awake. But I fall asleep like this, and it's kind of weird.
Are these on hard sparring days?
No,
just a normal day.
Like, it could happen every day.
Wow. You should get a GoPro, like a camera, and just record yourself all the time. Yeah, and then when you ever think that happens, watch it. I mean, those things record for like 8 hours at a time, some of them.
Yeah.
How long has this been going on?
Since I'm a kid.
Wow. Wouldn't it be crazy if the aliens like manufactured you to be mixed martial arts fighter? They're like, let's see if we could just turn this.
I'm sure if it would have happened, I would have been much better than this.
Better than this. You're the fucking champion.
If I would be alien manufacturer, I would be Superman, you know?
Well, they just won't want to get ridiculous with it.
It has to be realistic.
That would be obvious. Like, you can't turn a guy into a goddamn superhero.
Maybe they manufacture Anderson Silva, John Jones. Maybe they did Jose Aldo.
Maybe someone needs to talk to them about their sleep patterns. Maybe they're falling asleep behind the wheel, too, and being sucked aboard a spaceship for repairs.
Maybe they don't want to talk about it. Maybe they don't say it, but maybe they are. I don't know. I'm just pretending.
I think it's funny, though, that's maybe one subject that you had a really hard time talking about that.
I do, because it
sounds crazy.
Yes, and I will talk about it one day. I'm going to talk about my fear, all that stuff. But no, now I don't get deep into this.
Yeah, maybe they just.
But I promise one day I'll talk about stuff. But it's not what
you promise one day.
Yeah, I promise one day.
What's that? There is no tomorrow. Didn't you see Rocky III? When Apollo Creed says that to Rocky Balboa,
it's true. Like you said, maybe I'll die one day. Maybe I'll die tomorrow. I hope I touch wood not, and people are like, and I'm like,
How did you say that? Was that French? I touch wood not. Is that what
you said? I touch the wood. Oh. Like you say when you don't want it happen. You know.
Yeah, man, just let it go. Just whatever information you got, spill it.
No, but I don't know. I'm doing my own research. I'm researching on myself. Yeah. Like you say, that's the thing that you just told me. It's very interesting. The chemical that body DMT, produces.
Yeah.
That's I'm happy that I meet you today and you tell that about me because it make me happy now.
Yeah, it'll make you think. Like, I think a lot of people think they're going crazy. And it's not. It's just your brain makes psychedelic drugs.
It's true.
Your brain produces it and parts of your liver and your lungs. They don't know why this stuff is in the body, but it's a super potent psychedelic. Your brain makes it, and it happens when you're sleeping. So if, like, the speculation is that it happens during REM sleep, I don't think they have the most accurate way of measuring it, but they know it's in the body, and they believe it's the theory is that it comes out during periods of heavy stress or when your body thinks it's going to die or in REM sleep. And that those are the times that you have higher levels of this stuff in your, you know, neurochemical soup.
That's interesting.
It's crazy. Why would your brain produce an incredibly potent psychedelic drug? So a lot of people that are having these nighttime experiences, it could be just varying levels of this chemical that's going around in your brain. But that doesn't mean that these experiences aren't real. We don't know what the fuck sleeping is anyway. I mean, what is sleeping? You shut your eyes, you shut off, you don't exist in this plane, and your consciousness goes somewhere else. Like, literally, you have no memory of a giant chunk of your day, and we have no problem with it, and yet we don't connect it to any other realm or the idea of there being other dimensions. You go into another dimension when you go to sleep. Okay, you do. You just shut off. You stop. And for all intents and purposes, you are in another dimension. And if while you're in that other dimension, your brain is being pumped with this psychedelic chemical that when you take it when you're sober makes you have these incredible experiences, it just seems like a normal thing to look into. Like, people should be looking into that. Like, what is happening when you're sleeping? You're sleep. You go away. Yeah. And everybody's just so used to it. They're like, no big deal. We just go away. Just go away for 8 hours a day. You know, everybody's scared to die, and no one's scared to fall asleep. You're shutting off, man. You know you're going to be back, so you're not worried. But you're shutting off. Whatever that is, you know, is just accepted. If sleeping didn't exist, it would be the craziest fucking thing. If all of a sudden you told people that they had to shut off for 8 hours a night and just completely not be aware, they'd be like, what are you talking about? I got to shut off? They're like, yeah, you're going to shut off for that's 8 true. Hours a night, and you're not going to know what's happening. People can touch your balls while you're sleeping. You'll have no way of stopping them. There's a lot of things that can happen.
That truth is, like you said, we don't know. We don't know.
We don't know what the fuck that is.
I could like, you know, like you say, it's not that I'm afraid to be crazy. It's just I can say whatever the hell I want. And we don't know. Maybe, you know what I mean? We don't know. We don't know the truth. We have no idea.
Yeah, somebody might be stealing time from you. They might be stealing time. They're like, this motherfucker's got too much time.
The truth is, I feel like I had experience, but I don't know what it is. So for me to say it's alien or say it's the drug chemical you talk about, I don't know. I can't tell you right now. I don't know what it is. But I felt like it could have been an experience or not. Maybe I felt maybe I'm crazy and it's the normal thing that everybody would like. Maybe but right now I don't know. It's too. I'm making my own research to find out about that.
How are you researching?
Man, I research a lot of stuff, documentaries and things, and go on the internet. Now it's another thing that you just said to me. I'm going to research that. Maybe I research on the wrong. Maybe I research things that people have tried, because that lapse of time that you don't remember, some people been hypnotized and they had a bad, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Bad adventure. And I don't want to be hypnotized.
Well, that's very controversial. You know, what's happening during hypnosis, hypnotic regression, it's very controversial, because there's a lot of people that believe that you can introduce fake memories into a person while they're unconscious, and then you could, you know, you could steer the events in one way or another and introduce false memories. It's not very reliable, I don't think. So that's one of the big things about these people that have these crazy stories from hypnotic regression. Like, what the fuck is really going on? You know, you don't know. A lot of times people that are in therapy in the first place are a little wound up.
Of course.
It's that. Those are the type of people that you're dealing with. You're hypnotizing them, and then you're finding out about these nutty experiences with aliens. Who knows what the fuck you're really
getting? But I'm going to tell you, it's like Socrates used to say, you take a fish in the water, okay? And the fish is living in his environment. Let's say a fisherman, he grab a fish in the water. He pulls it off the water, look at him, make the fish look around, and drop the fish back in the water. The fish after is going to go back to his friend, and he's going to tell the other fish, man, I been pulled out of the water, and it was, people were breathing air. It was another environment. I saw a human being pull, you know, like a man grabbing me. I saw trees. I saw a bird in the sky. I saw like a sun. I'm like, I see a different thing in different universe. And then he put me back. The other fish will think he's completely insane, you know, and it's normal. So maybe in a way we're all like fish. And maybe there is something, like you said, like when you sleep, another universe or another world or something, and we don't know. And we're right next to it, but we don't know. And if that's why I'm doing research. I want to see, you know, I want to grow as a human being, find what was the truth, even though I probably will never find out the truth. But I want to get closer and find my own research, see what's happening, you know, and we're all in the same pattern, you know.
You know what I think the problem with people wanting to find the truth? Is there is no truth. There are truths. I think there is no one truth. And everyone is like, someday I hope to find the truth. Like, what are you talking about? It's not one thing. There's truths. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of stuff. And to call it the truth, like to figure out the whole big thing, that's almost impossible for our brains to grasp. Like an ant doesn't know what a cell phone tower is. It's almost impossible for our brains to grasp the enormity of you know, going from protons and cells and an animal and a planet and a galaxy and a universe and multiple universes. And it's too much. Yeah. There's no way you're going to be able to take all the things that are going in all over the world and understand it all and understand the pieces that it falls into. It's not possible. So this whole thing where it was like, I'm going to, you know, hopefully I'll find the truth. You will find truths.
It's
you
true.
Will never find the truth because you're a monkey.
Yeah, well, we're probably not smart enough. I understand what you say.
We're being birthed into a whole new universe of information that's never existed for any previous human beings, and we're not designed for it. We're not designed to process this. We're designed to figure out where the deer are going. We're designed to figure out who do you want to fuck. We're designed to think, this guy, he's probably going to take over my village, this cunt. And that's how we're designed. And then within the last 10,000 years, that has become, you know, watching, like, space documentaries and getting on the internet. And It's too much. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way you know exactly what's going on all over the world. You'll go crazy.
Yeah.
You don't have the time.
It will take a lot of time, yeah, and still, well, yeah, to acclimate. Yeah. I agree 100% with that.
Have you heard of, like, a lot of these guys, like Dan Hardy did this, going to Peru and they take these ayahuasca ceremonies? Did you hear about that?
No.
You didn't hear about that. Dan Hardy did it. I can't wait to get him on the podcast and talk to him about it, but he said it changed his whole life. And it's the same thing. It's DMT. It's these Amazon Indians. They make it in a brew, and the active ingredient is in this brew is DMT, and they have these ceremonies, and they all get together, and they'll play music, and this guy, like, blows tobacco smoke in your face, and you drink this stuff, and an hour and 20 minutes later, they enter into the spirit world, have life-changing visions, the wildest physical manifestations of your imagination you could ever possibly think of and dream of. You can't even think about it. You can't even put it into words. And it's legal in Peru. You know, it's legal in parts of South America. So people are going down there. These Americans are going down there on a regular basis and having these shamanic rituals, life-changing rituals. And it's all based on the same thing that comes out of your brain when you're dreaming.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty nutty.
Yeah, it could make you realize things. I'd like to say, learn about yourself, you know.
Do you meditate?
I would not say meditate. I would say visualizing, yes.
Visualizing.
Yeah.
So with specific tasks in mind, like visualizing fight strategies and
fights, visualizing what I want in my life, what, you know, where I wanted to be in 20 years. I've tried to visualize where I could be and what I want, you know. Could be about fight, could be about anything. Could be about my training and 1 hour, what I'm going to do, and, you know, about everything. Could be in business, you know. Could be when I'm going to meet someone, what I'm going to say, or, you know, could be about everything.
Do you have very specific, like, goals, like, for your life? Do you have, like, things written down?
Yes, I do.
Do you write them down?
Yeah, I have goals, yeah. Some I wrote it down, some I don't, but yeah, I do. I do have a specific goal. I have goals for my career, but I have bigger goal than this, much bigger.
Much bigger goal than your career?
Yeah, like, for example... Yeah.
Are you going to be president of the world?
No, but I want to be, for example, one of my goals is, like is to have a to be married, have a wife with at least four or five kids minimum.
Wow.
Want to have a lot of kids. That's one of my goals, you know. That's my goal, and that's, I'm not there yet, but it's one of my goals, you know.
I don't think you're gonna have a problem finding a nice lady.
Find a nice lady that I can get along with. That's
well, I think you better
have a lot of kids.
Look up in Canada.
Japan.
That's where you need Japan. To stay. Don't be trying to get these American chicks. They'll get mouthy. Especially after you retire. Oh, look at you all retired and shit, getting fat.
That's so funny.
Do you have, like, a clear timeline as to when you're gonna discontinue your fighting career?
No, I don't. I don't. I didn't plan this. Now I'm focusing on my career right now, and wanted to be the best at what I do. And I want to be the guy that made the difference in the sport, you know, help the sport, the UFC, grow and be more mainstream everywhere.
Well, you've already done that just by being who you are, you know, by your personality, you know, your ability to just be a normal guy who mm-hmm. just happens to be one of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet.
Yeah, but you know, I still is a lot of thing to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In some country that it's illegal, you know, and.
Right.
Help.
Sure. There's still a lot of work to do as far as the spread of MMA. Not just some countries, some states. It's still illegal in New York State.
When I first started, yeah, and where I'm from, my country, it was illegal in Canada. You know, they it was not sanctioned and everything. So this, I'm happy. At least where I live now, it's good and it's very popular.
Yeah, I watched your first fights, man. I watched you in the TKO organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched all those. You know, it's I've always been a big fan of MMA, and I think that it's so important that there's all these other organizations going on, like, you know, like that MFC up in Canada, and it used to be Strike Force, and, you know, now this Bellator is doing really well. It's, like, so important to have a bunch of different outlets for guys to pursue their careers. But up in Canada, it was just like that TKO organization, right? And
yeah,
a couple more.
Yeah, it was pretty much only the TKO.
You guys fought in a ring?
Yeah, it was in the ring back then, yeah.
Yeah. What do you do? Some guys prefer the ring. What do you prefer?
No, the cage.
The cage?
Yeah, the ring is, it's not the environment. The cage is better. Or I would rather do, like, Yeah, the cage is perfect. A circular, like octagon or circular cage, or even better than a ring, that would be like a platform where there is no walls. There is a line. No, you don't fall, but there is a line, and if you step across a line, they put you back. But there is a line, and then there is a bigger, so you don't fall, but it's a platform, and you know.
I see what you're saying.
And they have that in the Super League a little bit, but
like wrestling,
like sumo.
Yeah, kind of sumo. Yeah, exactly. I think that would be good too.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. It's just a space consideration, probably.
Exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. Exactly.
They don't want some Brock Lesnar dude just steamrolling someone right into the crowd.
It's true. No, that would be hardcore, but something I think like that, or you know, I think they got, you know, the cage is pretty good. You know, it's a good surface.
Yeah, the only objection that people have as fans is sometimes it makes the action a little harder to see. True. If you're there, you know, watching it at home, it's perfect.
I'm sure they could make a material which is like a window that you could see through it, like a plastic window, which
then
is
it
soft.
All greasy and shit. Every time dudes would be like, what if that Daniel Cormier Frank Mir fight happened?
True.
The whole thing would be just grease. You wouldn't be able to see shit because those guys pressed up against every spot on that cage.
But true. But it's also girl MMA now, and it could be like a car wash. Shit.
Like a girl MMA car
wash. No, it's true, but I'm sure there is. There's a lot of things I would have changed in the sport. First of all, the time is no time, no round.
Right.
I believe it's stupid, the round. Want to see who's the best man? Let them fight. You know,
yeah,
no,
so
no. 15 minutes or maybe 25 minutes for the championship. No round. Why the round? Why we try to be like boxing? You know, we're not boxers. They did round to be like boxing to be accepted as a sport.
Yeah, there would probably be a lot more finishes if there was no time limit.
Yeah, of course, 100%. No round. You know, like this is ridiculous. I mean,
I like it.
Do
you think it's possible that the UFC would you fight someone like that?
100%.
Would you arrange that like as a particular rule? Like maybe the UFC could do it in Russia or somewhere where they're gangster about it.
Yeah, I would rather fight in a rule like this. I think it would be more honest. Like, who's the better man? Let them fight. You know?
See, that could have happened in Pride. They did that in Pride, right? Doesn't Hoist Gracie have a 90-minute match with Sakuraba? But I think that was like, even then, it was like...
That's when they used to be the real thing, you know, back in the day. That's why I have so much respect for this guy. Hoist, Coleman, Dan Severn.
Oh, yeah.
This guy, the pioneer, you know?
Oh, yeah. The no time limit pioneer.
Arrow, Howard.
Yeah.
With his tank top.
With those crazy glasses.
Joe Sando. Who else did that?
You know, Joe San became like a
Freditish.
He's in jail for gang rape.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. Joe Sando was a part of a gang rape.
Are you serious?
Yeah, apparently. I
didn't know that.
They arrested him for something else and got his DNA and connected it to a gang rape from years by. Yeah.
I'm wondering what happened to like some of the other guy, like Harold Howard. You know?
I think he got arrested.
He's a Canadian. When I watched I was happy. You know, he's a Canadian guy. I was like, yeah, let's kick ass. You know.
Remember when he threw that crazy cartwheel kick?
Yeah.
On Steve Jenham.
Yeah. That was good. That was a good fight. You know.
Yeah, it was good, man.
How about
really
the boxer
good.
Emerson with one gloves? You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah, what was Jimerson? Art Jimerson.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, what was that about? Maybe he had a hurt hand or something.
No, I think he was thinking more like he's gonna grab with one hand and swing with the other one. I don't know. Like, who knows what's going through their mind? But it was awesome back then. It was a real thing. It was the time where I literally watched the fight back in the day and thought someone could die. You needed to have so much courage back in the day to step into the octagon, much more than nowadays. Nowadays, you know, okay, before it's no weight class, nothing.
And
it
no,
was like unknown.
Rescue.
It was unknown. I remember a fight like Norris against Pat Smith. Man, the guy had like blood everywhere before they stopped the fight. Then you see a towel flying and he still didn't stop the fight. I'm like, this is when... Time, you. This is the guys, the pioneer. You know, these guys, they were the real tough guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was no referee stopping.
Yeah, no referee, no round, no athletic commission, no weight class, no this, no that, no way. You know,
do you
was
see
real...
fights where fights get stopped quickly? Does that piss you off?
Well, you know, it's to protect the. You know, the referee can make a mistake sometime, and it pisses me off. Yeah, it's sad to see when it's a mistake done. I think they try to be the best they could be, but like I can't believe the round. I don't. I don't think round is a good idea. That's my opinion. Personally.
Just round in it.
Round
in,
it's
in
a
general.
Bad idea. Yeah.
What about gloves? Some people think there should be no gloves. Some people think if you can knee a guy and elbow a guy and kick a guy, like, why do you have covers on your knuckles?
That's true. Could be an option. No glove, but there would be a lot of broken hand. But the problem is they would fight differently. Like, back in the day in Pancration, I wrote stuff that they used to hit a lot with the smash, the hand, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you watch the old Boss Rutten days in Pancrase, he figured out that he could throw punches. He pulls his hand way back. So instead of, like, slapping and, like, karate chop style, he was throwing punches. But he was doing it with his palm.
Yeah. But the thing is, we wouldn't fight the same way we would fight now to preserve our body. Like when I fought Nick Diaz, he was in turtle position. I was punching. Like, if I would be bare hand, I would hit with my palm, you know what I mean? I wouldn't hit like the same way. I would have probably broke my hand, or you know.
Yeah.
I never had my hand broken, you know. I'm lucky, you know. But you know, I would fight different way. It would make it better also for all the grappling aspect.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and wrestling. It would be better.
It would be more realistic. I mean, I don't really understand why they have a pad on the gloves. I mean, I think it's
100%.
If you don't have pads on your shins and you're kicking people in the face, like, come on, that's crazy. Like, you're going to pad little knuckles? And yeah, you can cut people more, but it also breaks your hand more. If you're trying to have it be realistic, it's almost like bad to allow people to wear gloves because it allows them to tee off and punch as hard as they can without worry about breaking their hands.
100%. 100%. It's true. And you could break your hand, but, you know, you hit a guy with a good punch on the jaw, you know, a bare knuckle, I don't think you will break your hand, you know. Just doing karate, you know, Kyokushin, they, you know.
Well, people are also, you know, in,
would punch
boxing.
Much harder, of course, because the tape. I don't think it's the glove. I think it's the tape that holds the wrist. Yeah. So there is no movement in the wrist and everything. All the impact makes it harder. More.
Definitely.
That's why I believe, you know.
Yeah, I think the hand wrap definitely aids the person who's punching.
Yes.
But you also would be really cognizant of only punching with the first two knuckles, you know, because in boxing, you know, you're taught to punch and concentrate on those knuckles, but in reality, a lot of times when you throw in combinations, you're hitting them with all parts of your hand. Whereas you're taught in karate, the idea of punching, you know, like a makiwara over and over and over again, it's to toughen these two knuckles.
Jack Dempsey says is the third knuckle.
The third knuckle?
Yes, he used to punch with the third knuckle, and he was known for punching power.
Yeah, he could punch very hard, Jack Dempsey.
So he says it's the third knuckle because he said the alignment of the body is better with the third knuckle.
That's interesting.
So maybe...
Well, I would never argue with Jack Dempsey, but most people believe that it's the first two.
No, knuckles. No, I know. Like in karate, same thing they teach, but Jack Dempsey, strangely, says the third knuckle in the book. He says that.
That guy was a fucking savage, huh?
Yeah, he was like...
Watch those old school fights, and he would fight dudes much bigger than him. He was only about 190. I think he was like 196 or something like that when he was the heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
He was fucking up those. You know what? I might be wrong. I think actually Jack Dempsey was even lighter than that. I think Jack Dempsey. Hold on a second. Let me pull it up. I don't even think he was 196. Rocky Marciano, which is really
Marciano was 175.
Yeah. What the fuck, man? There's certain dudes like that just can hit so fucking hard.
Yeah, yeah, but their opponent was not as big as well, you know. Now we're like monster. Like look at Klitschko, you know. It's crazy, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't say his weight on his Wikipedia. It says he was 6 foot one.
Marciano or Dempsey? Marciano was like 175, 180.
Marciano was?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was 185.
Marciano, I remember I read it was a 180. I don't think he was.
Dempsey was 192.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like my size. It's my size fighting the heavyweight guy like Brock Lesnar. Holy shoot.
But they had those little tiny-ass gloves back then.
True.
They had just a little cover over the knuckles. Very little padding at all. And it was probably just like a little horsehair in there as well. Wild. Wow. Do you pay attention to, like, old videos of, like, old fights? Do you ever watch, like, old boxing matches and see, like what guys like Dempsey had to go through? What guys like Jack Johnson had to go through?
I watch a lot of stuff, you know? Like, what I've been watching on the internet recently is a lot of karate stuff. I'm really intrigued into that.
Really?
Yeah, like the point karate guys. Uh-huh. I think that it's very underrated.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of very good fighters. They come from that, and I think it translates to MMA very, very well.
Absolutely. Marciano was 188, apparently. The ability to move in and out like really quickly.
That's the best.
Have you fought in point tournaments before?
I did. Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
I'm from Kyokushin Karate. It's not the same system, but I did point karate before. Yeah.
I fought only a few point karate tournaments, but I found them. I fought some. Fought one really high level guy, and who's like he wins a lot of those point tournaments. It was so different from Taekwondo being like continuous fighting to this being like stop. You know, it's like, and it was really hard to fight that way if you're not used to it. And I would just imagine that a guy who's really good at lunging in and out like that, if you could teach him all the other aspects of MMA, that would be a big advantage.
That's what I use for my takedown. The shoot that people say, oh, it's your wrestling. It has nothing to do with my wrestling. My wrestling is once I get the leg, I finish the takedown. But how I get in and out is because of karate. People are like, no way, karate, no. And I, yes, karate that allowed me to cut the distance and take the people down. Yeah. I have a very good single to the ball or very good double and very good penetration. It's because of my leg, the way I do, and this timing, I get it from the karate.
Wow. Yeah, that's
I wrestling in. Too, but karate primary. Because before I started wrestling, I was karate guy, pure. And I just acclimate myself very well to wrestling and to wrestling for, especially for the mixed martial art.
Wow, that's really interesting. Because I've always said that one of the best things about you is your ability to close the distance.
Yeah, it's karate. That
makes
karate.
Sense. Yeah, it totally makes sense. Yeah,
all my footwork pattern and everything is from karate. This is what I get it from.
Springing in like that, you know, the ability to cover that distance, that's a huge advantage.
Cover the distance and to not get hit. Mm-hmm. This is very important.
Right. Yeah, and that is one of the cornerstones of those tournaments and that style. Did you have a hard time when you made the transition to Muay Thai and MMA style?
Yeah, today even my kicks are like more like karate guy, you know. I do Muay Thai, but my kick, you know, it's like printed inside of my brain.
Right.
It's hard to say. Like, you're a Taekwondo guy. You can kick, but you will stay Taekwondo. Like, and you know, it's fine too, you know. It's the best, like, I believe Taekwondo is the best spinning back kick. You have the best spinning back kick I ever seen in my entire life, you know. You're from Taekwondo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it is your background. And you try to change your technique of your spinning back kick, it will be the worst thing you could do. You know what I mean? So I try to learn to add stuff to my arsenal, but I don't try to change my thing. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, I still incorporate a lot of those techniques, but I do more just regular Muay Thai now than anything else. Because I think all those techniques, like the spinning back kick and wheel kick, for a guy like you that has like a strong karate background or a guy who picks things up really quickly, that's, you know, those are good techniques to learn. But like for everyday use, it's hard to pull those things off unless you're doing it on a regular basis. Like they become normal when you're fighting in Taekwondo tournaments and everybody's doing it and you're doing it every day. But in MMA, there's so many other fucking things. Like, to have the type of leg dexterity that you see, like, the top-level Taekwondo guys have, it's be so hard to have that along with wrestling, along with boxing, along with jiu-jitsu. Like, how do you manage, like, all your different skill sets? Do you have, like, a 20% of your time goes to this, 30% goes to that? Like,
No, it depends. I'll give you an example right now. Last week I was doing for the movie Captain America, the filming, then now I'm doing the interview. But every day I find time, I go to Freddie Roach, work on my boxing. And this period of my, like this time I'm on my boxing pretty much. And when I'm going to go to New York, for example, because I have to go to New York for the book promo and stuff, I'm going to do my jiu-jitsu with John Danaher. I'm going to be doing jiu-jitsu. When I go back in Montreal, I mixed up everything, you know. But when I go to different places, I go, you know, I do my specific things.
And this is in between fights, so you don't have a fight scheduled. So now you're just in the skill development phase, is that what it is?
Yeah, and that's when my training is fun, because I train for myself to get better, and I try stuff. Mm-hmm. Like now, you see me, if I go roll with my friend, like at his academy, I roll, I try stuff that I would maybe not have the guts to try a normal time because it's risky. Right. So I try it. Oh, I get tapped, and you know, I tap and I laugh. Who cares? I tap. I don't care. Sometimes I tap him. Sometimes I get tapped.
Right.
But when I train for a training camp, now I train for performance. So I have to perform. I cannot be beaten in training. Otherwise, my confidence will be affected. So I try to perform. So that's when my training is not as fun as it is now.
Right. Yeah, the ability to loosen up in training is very important when you're in the learning phase, right?
Yes, yes.
That's how you develop new techniques. And there is an ego issue, too, like with guys who are not that good at jiu-jitsu, like you see it a lot, like maybe like strikers.
Yes.
They don't want to roll because they don't like getting tapped.
Nah, that's stupid. It doesn't mean anything. You tap, it doesn't mean you're not as good as the other guy. It doesn't mean you play that game and you just get cut. And so what, you know? So what? I get tapped all the time. I don't give a damn, you know?
It's a fascinating aspect of jiu-jitsu, though, that doesn't exist in other martial arts. You know, like if you kickbox and spar a guy, it's not as, you know.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to be knocked out. But, I mean, it would be the same thing in a way. Let's say you're a jiu-jitsu guy and you do kickboxing with a guy, but that guy will not knock you out. He will do a combo that he will be like, you will know, like, oh, that right hand would have knocked me out.
Right.
If, you know, it's something in jiu-jitsu, oh, I would tap, otherwise he would have break my arm. You know,
yeah,
it's
a little bit
same thing. We don't hurt each other. In jiu-jitsu, you can allow to go further without hurting each other than in kickboxing, for example, where it's striking. It can be brain damage.
That's the hardest. Is it, or I should ask you, is that the hardest place to find guys that you're comfortable training with is in striking? So you know that they're not trying to knock you out. You know, you like every day in the gym isn't a war.
It's different. I'm going to tell you, is I have many times people try to hurt me and I try to hurt them. You know, like I have no choice, you know. I've been, you know, when I first, you know, now it's different because of the notoriety I have. I can find place how I can go and, I mean, training, it's training, you know, we still go hard. There is a smart way to train, of course. I don't try to hurt myself when I train and try to hurt people, you know. But of course, let's say I'm training for a fight, before a fight, and we spar hard. If the guy, you see, you hurt the guy, you let him breathe. You know, you don't go for the finish. But the thing is, for example, kick to the head, we control the kick to the head, things like that. You know, we don't do knees onto the head, the elbows, stuff like that. We don't do that. And this is important to have a good training partner like that, you know. Because sometimes you train with someone who's crazy, you're getting ready for a fight. It's a lot of money on the table. He's going to cut you or like things like that you don't need, you know, to make a name for himself. So now when people ask me, hey, why you going to go train in my gym? And so, it's because sometimes because I go train in the gym, they know who I am. I'm George St. Pierre. And they go, oh, I'm going to try to hurt him to make a name for myself. And that sucks, you know. I don't like it. So they're very careful with who I train now. That's a bad side of it because a lot of people try to take advantage and make the name, you know.
Right.
And I don't like it, you know. I like to train with different training partner, new guys, but now I have to be careful to do it. I cannot do it, you know. I have to know where I'm going. Tell the guy, oh, this guy, you can go with him. He's good, you know. And I don't care that get tapped out or be dominated. That's not what I care. It's care of being hurt, you know, or injured, not be able to work. You know, it's a lot of money. When I have a fight, I have to cancel. It sucks. You know?
Yeah, there's always accidental injuries, but there's the injuries where you know a guy's trying to hurt you because he's trying to. That's got to be really annoying. Yeah.
There is guys that, how do you say, they always hurt people. And they say, oh, no, I didn't mean it. But I'm like, why it always happened to you, man? Mm-hmm. Why I always happened to you? I've got in the gym in Montreal. It's like, when I bring my training partner here, for like say I bring guys to train from like my last training camp, bring guys to train for my training camp to mimic Nick Diaz. I tell these guys, I listen, there is this guy, you're not going to train with him because he's like, and they're all like, hey, why? It's like, because every time someone train with you, it happen an injury. It's like, yeah, but I don't mean it. It's like, you don't mean it, but it's still happening, man. It's like, it's that's how you are, man.
I've seen guys kicked out of gyms for that.
Of course. But some guys, it's intentional. Some guys, it's not intentional. Yeah. But even if it's not intentional, you don't want to take the chance to do it. You know what I mean? I don't hurt people when I train. Find me a guy that I hurt in training. It could have happened accidentally once in a while. Very rare. It's very rare I hurt people, you know. Very, very rare. I could if I wanted to. I could. But I don't hurt. I don't hurt the people, you know.
Yeah, you're there to train.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that I know that just people just won't train with. They say, oh, he just they just walk away.
Yeah,
from him.
You're gonna get hurt.
No thanks. Yeah,
but because you know what, the minute you're gonna train with them, it's gonna be a fight. You know, it's gonna be like a real fight. And I fight. And I'm paid to fight. And I don't want to hurt myself in real life. You know, and I don't want to have to hurt some. I don't want to put myself in this situation.
You put together a great camp now, though, man. You're going to so many different great guys. John Donaher, who's one of the most underrated or underappreciated jiu-jitsu coaches in MMA, in the world, really. You know, with you, if you look at all the different guys that get famous for coaching jiu-jitsu, talked to a lot of people about John Donaher, and they all said the same thing, like, that guy's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, he's
super
amazing.
Smart, brilliant in the corner. Like, I love the advice he gives. He's always, like, on point, direct, accurate.
He's probably the most, I would say, like, brilliant, educated man I ever met in my life.
Yeah, he is brilliant. Yes. Like, a lot of people don't know, you know. I believe he was a philosophy major.
Yeah, he's a bouncer. He's a PhD in a philosophy. He used to teach philosophy in Columbia University.
And he was
before
a bouncer.
Before he dropped everything and dedicated his life to jiu-jitsu. And he was bouncing at night in a hip-hop club. In a hip-hop club. Can you believe it?
And apparently he was like big on like weightlifting back then.
Yeah, he was like a bodybuilder. Yeah. Bodybuilder.
And then he starts doing jiu-jitsu and fell in love with it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So you go to him for your jiu-jitsu and Henzo as well, right? You go to Henzo's?
I go to Henzo. That's where
you travel a lot of gyms.
Yeah, but I travel. It's a good thing because I have places that no matter, like I come to LA often for business stuff. But when I come to LA, I have the place where I can train in LA. You know, I'm very happy. I have a place where I can train in New York. I go to New York a lot. And Montreal, of course, France, Paris, France, you know, and it's important, you know. So everywhere I go, I have like a second home where I can go train there and get better.
That was hilarious when you brought that French dude with you on the Ultimate Fighter, and he showed up hammered. What is his name again?
Jean-Charles Skarbowski.
Yeah.
He's very, very good Muay Thai guy.
Very famous Muay Thai kickboxer, and he would be partying all night and show up to the gym with one of them club cups, a plastic cup, and there was fucking alcohol in it. Like
he's out of his mind. He shows up. He was drunk and high from the party. Like, he haven't slept for more than, like, 36 hours, you know, for that flight to Paris. Then I thought I made the training when he arrived. I made on purpose. I organized the training for him to come teach the afternoon class, the late afternoon, not the morning class, because I was thinking, oh, he's going to sleep. No, he arrived from Paris the night before, went out all night, went in an after party, went in an after party, and arrived straight to training. Didn't even go to his hotel room. Wow. And train and kick everyone's ass in Muay Thai. Everybody was like, what the hell is this? And even when he left, because he stayed for like a week, when he left, the producer of the Ultimate Fighter came to see me. George, we need to get this guy. We need to keep this guy here. It was good TV, you know? I was like, no, he's leaving. He has to go back. It was making me look bad sometimes, you know? Man, it was like giving, I know. Like,
and he's not an imposing looking guy, which is amazing. No. When you look at him, he's not like a scary looking.
But he doesn't know anything about MMA. That's the thing. He has no idea who was Chuck Liddell, who was Anderson. He had no idea. He came in the room and he saw those pictures. Like, who's these guys are? You know, like, he knows all those like famous Muay Thai guys, but MMA doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah, he fights Thais. Like, he fights in Lumpini Stadium. And
yeah, he fought Buakaw, the guy. Yeah. He cut Buakaw with a spinning elbow in the head, you know? Like, he lost that fight, but he took that fight on a short notice, like a few days notice, and he was underweight. Wow. He had to gain weight for the
weight class.
The weight class. He doesn't care. He has like courage like crazy.
Wow. It's weird because you look at the guy, you'd never think that guy's a fighter.
It's amazing. His character. We're surrounded by a lot of character.
Kickboxing is much more famous in Europe than it is in America, isn't it?
True. I believe the level is higher in Europe.
Yeah. Apparently, the Glory, though, they're going to start to bring Glory to someone. I think they're going to bring it to, Frank Shamrock said, they're going to bring it to CBS Sports. I don't know what channel that is. You know, which you know, I think CBS has like a bunch of different channels that they own. But if they start airing those, like, high-level, you know, like Gokhan Saki and Daniel Gita and all these, like, high-level heavyweight guys, that's some wild shit to watch.
It's true. It's true. It's got to be interesting, you know, bring that here.
Yeah. It's so funny how, like, the difference in just, like, a pure straight-up kickboxing match, you know, when guys have no worries about being taken down. You know, and when people say, oh, like the level of kickboxing in MMA is not as high as the level of kickboxing.
It's a different distance.
Yeah,
it's everything's different. Right? You cannot compare. It's
different stance.
Look, Alistair Overeem got knocked out by
Antonio Bigfoot Silva.
Yeah, Silva. Yeah. But he's a K-1 champion. Yeah. It's because it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. I mean, it's easy to adapt when you're a higher level K-1 guy to adapt to MMA timing, but the timing is different.
I think Alistair had some issues going into that fight.
Oh, it could be too. Like, yeah. I don't know the inside of it, but I'm just thinking.
He's got a testosterone issue. Low testosterone.
Yeah.
He tested high for testosterone, like he had taken something.
Okay.
And now he has low testosterone.
Okay, but I mean, like, it's just an example. I don't know the behind closed door, whatever.
He just didn't look like he had a lot of energy, and Bigfoot Silva waited until he got tired and just beat the shit out of him.
Mm.
That was a brutal knockout, too.
Yeah, I remember I was surprised to see that. I was like, oh, my God, I was not expecting this.
Bigfoot Silva looked awesome. That was an amazing combination, man. I mean, you know, whether Alistair was hurt or not, the combination he leveled him with was devastating. You know, it was a lot like remember Phil Baroni and Dave Monet? Remember that knockout where Phil Baroni had Dave Monet pinned up against the cage?
Oh, that was violent, yes.
It was not quite as bang, violent
bang, bang,
as
bang,
that.
Bang, 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 bang.
Oh, he hit him like four times before Monet can even drop.
That was bad, yeah.
And Baroni could fucking hit. Yeah. And he's teeing off on him, and literally he's keeping him standing with his punches. This Bigfoot one wasn't quite as devastating as that, but it was number two.
Yeah, man, it was like bouncing on the felt, like yeah. Bang, 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 bang.
It was like the greatest punching highlight reel knockout ever, that Baroni-Manet fight.
It's true. It was bad. It was bad. Some of those knockouts you watch are like, ooh.
Yeah. When you first lost your title to Matt Serra, that was the first time that
Matt Serra, yeah, it's true, yeah. It's true.
When you lost your title to Matt Serra, and you know, and Matt Serra stopped you, you know, that was that like that had to be like the most devastating loss of your career, right?
It was, but I learned something valuable that allowed me to survive to Carlos Condit.
What was that?
When I got hit by Matt Serra, the first punch, I make me very dizzy. And I was so proud. Like, pride, it's a good thing, but it could be a bad thing. I was so proud. I'm a very proud person. So I got wobble, you say in English, right?
Wobble.
I got wobble. And instead of back off and say, oh, I'm going to go back to my sense, wait that I go back to my equilibrium before reattacking, I got wobble and I got so angry. I was like, I can't believe this guy, because back in the day, it was like 5-1, 10-1, the odds. I was like, I can't believe I get wobble by a guy like this, you know, like back in the day, like I was angry that I got wobble. I was a proud guy, first time it ever happened in my life, so I wanted to give it back to him as fast as I can. But Matt Serra hit very hard, so I didn't have any equilibrium. I got a wobble with one shot, then I tried to jump back into a war with him, into a slugfest with him while I was wobble, and he wasn't. So I got punched, like, boom, boom, boom. Then he started tee off on me, and then I fall down, and I tap. I knew I was completely out. If I would have keep going, I would be like, you know, I had to stop. And thanks God the referee stopped. But what happened with Carlos Condit, the same situation. I got kicked in the head. Then instead of telling, oh, I need to give it back to him, I fall on the ground. I said, you know what? Yes, I got caught. Then relax now. It's time to defense. Catch up your breath. Catch up your senses. Bang, bang, bang. I focus on my defense, my shield, close everything. Every opportunity has to hurt me. And then I came back after. So I step into my ego a little bit, try to accept the fact that I got hit, relax, and then I came back later. That's a little bit of that's the experience that I gained from that loss with Matt Serra that allowed me to survive Carlos Condit.
Oh, interesting.
Because Carlos Condit dropped me with that kick.
Uh-huh.
Matt Serra, the first time he cut me, I wobbled, but I didn't drop. Like, I was on my feet. But I tried to get back right into a slugfest with him. Uh-huh. Instead of backing up, tried to use my footwork, get back to my senses. And that's what happened. I got caught. You know, sometimes you learn during a loss. And that's what happened to me. Matsuro, by beating me, he helped me become a better martial artist, you know?
The kick that what had you in more trouble? The punch by Matsuro or the kick by Condit?
But the kick, I believe, with Condit was like harder, was a bigger kick. The first punch, if you look, the punches of Serra finished me because it was many punches. And I took many punches before I fall. And I when I fall, I was too late. I was completely dizzy, you know. But I should have, when I got punched and wobbled, because Matsuro hit very hard and I never seen that punch coming, I should have stepped back and or hold him or go for, you know, instead of try to slugfest with him. And Condit, when I got dropped, I said to myself, I said, okay, like, don't go back into a... Because I could like, go back, try to go a single, go back up right away. I said, okay, use the guard, up, close everything. And you know, because I was dizzy a little bit too, Condit, you know. I didn't see the kick coming at all. I follow his body, and his kick come on the side and on the temple. He damaged my temple artery, by the way. It was a hard kick, man. It was
It looked like a hard kick.
I had to go to hospital after and get it fixed, you know.
You have to go in 10 minutes? Is that what's going on here? Is that why you guys were having a fucking conversation? What is it? What's going on? You know, having another interview? Man, what kind of other interview you got? It's a boring-ass bullshit is what you got. What do you got to do?
It's other PR stuff for the book, I guess.
The book, PR stuff. So everybody wants
to. And I need to go train too, Joe.
Yeah, where are you going to train tonight?
Freddy
Rose. Don't tell anybody, man. They're going to go watch you.
They have the security.
Curves.
Gonna...
curves.
Do you, like, now that you just beat Diaz, there's a lot of people that are coming up in the 170-pound division. Of course, Johnny Hendricks is the big name, and Jake Ellenberger and all these different guys. Do you, at one point in time, there's been a lot of talk. At one point in time of you guys getting together and you and Anderson Silva meeting maybe at a catch weight or something like that and fighting in a super fight.
Yeah, is that question everybody asked me? They asked me that even before I came back from my injury, you know?
Right.
Like, they wanted me, like, I need to do stuff in my division before I think, because it's new, it has moved now, so.
Right.
I know Silva is fighting Chris Weidman, but Anderson Silva is very big, you know? He's 230 pounds, you know? He's a very big guy, he walk around very big. And I'm 190 pounds.
Right.
And if he's a lot of weight different. So, you know, if this fight happens one day, we're going to have to decide what weight class and, you know, everything. But this is, you know, and try to see, figure out what's going to happen, what weight class and everything.
He says he can make 170.
Nah, if he won't make 170, I weight 170 and he can 170. It's fine.
Do you think that's possible?
He was fighting back in the day in Japan at 168.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but he was over 25 years old.
Wow. So you think if he just did it slowly over a long time?
Yeah. Probably.
What's the biggest cut you've ever seen? The biggest weight cut?
I did, or
anybody that you've ever seen anybody do?
I don't do much, a lot of cut. It would be easier for me to go fight at 155 than fighting at 185. I would be more at my weight naturally than at the 155. There's guy at 155, they walk around 190 like me.
Yes, I've seen him. Yeah,
because they think I'm big because I have a large frame, but I don't have a. I'm not big guy. I'm very. I'm not thick. I'm not thick. You know.
Right.
But you know, I. We'll see this fight. Like, now he's fighting women, and, like, Hendricks is freaking out. He want to fight me. It's a little, you know, we'll see, you know, what's going to happen in the future.
What do you think is next? Is it going to be the Hendricks fight? That's not
probably
Stone,
probably
right?
Hendricks, you know?
Yeah. Probably. That's a big fight.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's always going to be a guy that people say, oh, this guy going to beat you. It's after Hendricks, well, you know, we'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's a good fight. It's a fight that a lot of people want to see.
Yeah.
And you have a very talent-stacked division. You know, you at the top, and look at how many great contenders are at 170.
Yeah, no, it's a very tough division. You know?
What's it like walking around with that kind of stress? I mean, you got like a whole line of trained killers that want to get to the champ. You know, is that a difficult thing to manage?
I'm not stressed. I try to take one fight at a time, you know, and focus on one guy at a time. I have no choice. You know, I cannot split myself in half, you know. And for me, the last two fights were close to each other. And my second fight, the training camp, it was brutal, like in a way that I didn't have mental break. now I need to take a little break mentally to come back stronger after. Because otherwise, I will get tired at what I do. I will not be as good as I could be, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you still train. You still constantly
all the time. But shit. I train for fun. I don't train for performance, which is different. Like I explained earlier, right, like I train for myself. I'm having a good time. It's fun.
Now, while you're doing this, do you keep up with your jiu-jitsu at all, or do you just do your boxing?
No. I do jiu-jitsu too.
You do everything.
Yeah, it's very important.
How many hours a day do you train?
It depends. Like now, I'm gonna have only maybe 1 hour and a half. I'm going to train at Freddy, and that's it. And then, it depends my schedule. Normally, I train twice a day. Three hour maybe total, like two training of an hour and a half. The training itself is maybe 30 minutes, the mm-hmm. training itself, but the talking, the this, the that, the changing, the mm-hmm. shout, an hour and a half.
Now, are you still doing gymnastics?
Yes, I do.
How often do you do that?
Once, twice a week now.
And you think that's like really responsible for a lot of like
I like gymnastic and track and field. I do track and field. I run track too.
Like sprints and jumps and things
60,
along those lines?
60, 100s and 400s.
And you feel like that's the best kind of exercise for MMA?
Yeah, if I would have start all over again, because back in the day I used to train like an idiot. I was doing bodybuilder and watching movies like, Rocky and all this, and Jean-Claude Van Damme, Arnold. I thought that was the thing. But back in the 90s, for my generation, that was the thing. Back in the day where I'm from, Canada, a mix of martial art and bodybuilding was the best mix it could be. You were like you say, a badass, you say that. Then after we discovered that bodybuilder is not suited for, mixed martial art, it's better like do like, I was doing more like strength conditioning kind of stuff.
Right.
Then I found out after the strength conditioning, it was better, and Olympic lifting, I think it's better than gymnastic.
Do you think it's better for your joints as well?
Yes, track and field and gymnastic. If I would have to do, let's say I would have to go back in time. I would have to tell myself that, George, stop all that bodybuilding stuff that you're doing. It's better to do gymnastic and track and field.
Is that because you're already a fairly physically strong guy and you're pretty strong from wrestling as well?
But I'm very strong when I wrestle, when I grab someone, mm-hmm. like in that strength. But if I lift weight, I'm not very strong. I bench like what? Two plate and a half maximum. I'm not very strong bench press. People are like, my God, you're not very strong. I get it. I'm not strong at lifting weight. When I was a kid, I remember I was in secondary school, and everybody, the thing was to have a big chest, Every guy wanted to have a big chest. So I remember for years, I used to do bench press, flies, dumbbell. And man, I never had a chest in my life. I never had it. I tried so hard to train for it. I never had volume here. And it's genetic, man. That's the way it is. So I said, I'm not going to do it, man. I'm going to do for gym. Like, I give up on it. I have big legs, big butt, big calves.
Say it. You're going to say cock.
But you know what I mean? I don't have chest, man. I try to work, but it's that one of these things that, I give up on it, man. I give up.
Well, you could always
implants.
Do what Tommy Morrison did, get breast implants.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, but there's a lot of ways that I can use to have chest,
Have you seen that, the Tommy Morrison breast implants?
No, I don't.
Remember Tommy Morrison, the boxer?
The guy that he had the AIDS?
He had the AIDS?
Is that him?
Yes.
He has a disease, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard that.
He also got breast implants.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pull that up, Brian. Pull that up. Tommy Morrison, breast implants. Why am I doing this? Okay, here's why, folks. Because if there's a guy out there that's thinking about getting breast implants and I can talk him out of it, I got to do my job. You got to see this. Take a look at this fucking picture. Uh-huh. This is Tommy Morrison. He has, pull it up.
Yeah.
Got to hit the switch.
Is this it? Yes.
Look at that.
Oh, man. That's not good, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's not that good, man. That's hilarious.
Wow. That sucks.
Yeah. Don't do that. That's what I'm saying, folks. Anybody, please listen to me. Is there an unauthorized biography of you as well?
Yes, there is.
Who the fuck wrote that?
I don't know. It's sad. You call up my mom. You know, my parents are very nice people. You know, they're from countryside. They're always very respectful to everybody. And this guy, apparently, he called up my mom and my dad. My dad is an old, nice guy. Oh, yeah. He answered all the questions. And I told my friends, like, stop answering questions that people call like this, man. Because, it's a little bit naive. They don't know this thing. So I say, stop talking to people you don't know about, like,
they so some asshole just wrote a book based on that?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's a bad book. He only talk about my fights. He basically describe my fight. He don't say anything personal. He doesn't know me.
Right. So that's not a real unauthorized biography.
No.
The real one, though.
The real one is The Way of the Fight. It's available on Amazon. You can go buy it right now. It's available in bookstores.
Kindle.
You can get it on a Kindle. You can get it on audible.com. Can you get it on Audible?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking it?
It's me.
Doing it?
I start doing it when I had my ACL surgery, and that's why I start writing down stuff. But I didn't wrote all word myself. It's in English. I don't write.
Right.
But it's made with someone. I need it like.
So you don't write it in English at all? You just speak it?
I write English, but I would not write a book in English because it has been made in English first, then in French. So his name is Justin Kinsley, who's a friend of mine who wrote it. The book for me, but he took stuff that I say and in my notes, stuff that I write myself in French. He speak both languages, bilingual. Ah. So he switched it to the book.
Oh, so you switched it to English?
Yeah, it's not a biography. It's not about an MMA book. It's not a book for MMA. It's a book for more general public. You know,
what's it all about?
It's about the tactic that I use to start where I come from and to be world champion. I find myself goals and drills, the repetition, and I keep doing every day, and that's all, you know.
So that's what the book is about?
Yeah, it's more philosophical stuff.
Oh, wow.
It's more a philosophical book. It has nothing to do with MMA. It talk about MMA, but it's like people that like it normally is people. Because it not has been written by an MMA guy. The guy who written, he doesn't know nothing about MMA.
Oh.
Even the MMA people, sometimes they might read it and say, the terms are, because sometimes little mistake we correct in the future that it would misunderstood, but is a book about philosophy and the mindset of someone where I come from, how I became successful from my experience.
Well, George, you're a bad motherfucker. You're a cool guy. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you,
Joel.
I'm
glad to be your friend. And it was one of the coolest things in my life is being able to teach you throw a turning sidekick. The fact that you would even listen to me when I tell you that I had a good one.
I'm going to do it in a fight one day, I promise you. I promise. I'm not comfortable enough. We're going to do soon.
Well, let's tighten it up, man. Let me give you some drills.
Let's do
it
again.
Some drills for it that can definitely help you out, help you increase accuracy. And we'll do it some more. We'll train some more.
For sure, man.
Love you, buddy.
Thank you, man.
Thank you very much, my friend, and best of luck to you in the future. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of this abbreviated episode of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. Thanks to Hover. Go to hover.com/Rogan. Get 10% off your domain name registrations. Thanks to stamps.com. Enter in the code word JRE in the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and save yourself some shekels, son. For any information on Brian's upcoming comedy shows, go to deathsquad.tv, including podcasts that you can get only on iTunes on the Death Squad label. Like Ryan Keeley's Muff Said and Kevin Pereira's Pointless. It's also the Death Squad Ice House Chronicles, which we do on a regular basis. And we probably will do tomorrow night. You want to do one tomorrow night?
Sure.
We're going to do one tomorrow night, you dirty bitches. Tomorrow night we'll see you guys at the world-famous Ice House Comedy Club in Pasadena with Tommy Segura, Tony Hinchcliffe, Bert Kreischer, Brian Redband, and myself. And until then, we love you. Go fuck yourself.